And we're holding on page 46 in Psachim, three lines from the bottom, still middle of Os Memvav. Having talked about the danger of Shadim and Kishuf and whatever, so the Gemara had started with a list of a number of different things that are otherwise harmful to a person, to a person's health or to his parnasa or whatever. So continuing on that theme, the Gemara continues, saw a puma dechatzva putting a plate or a basin on top of a barrel of wine, koshal aniyusa, is also bad. It can bring a person to be poor. Why, again, the Gemara doesn't specify, and I haven't seen anything in the Mefarshim that explain why. Maybe the idea is that normally you would have on top of a barrel, you'd have an actual cover. So if instead, like a person is too cheap to use a cover and instead just figures, oh, use a plate, the wine itself is going to get ruined, and such a person is not likely to be able to attract Parnassa and to attract Mazel. Another one involving a plate, mandashosi maya b'tzoi, a person who drinks water out of a plate, koshula barukti, it's bad that it can bring him to barukti, which Rashi and Shvam translate as kilyanayim, which means a wasting eye disease, so some kind of disease that progressively attacks a person's vision. Before we had earlier, we had Rabbi Yosef saying something that the things that can bring a person are bono, which is blindness. Here we're saying barukti, which is apparently a specific type of eye disease. Anyway, if a person eats cress, a type of herb, they used to use it in salads and other things, he doesn't wash his hands afterwards, he's going to have an unnameable fear and terror for 30 days. He's going to be afraid and paranoid for 30 days without knowing what it is that's causing it. In other words, because it causes a ruach ra, basically. If he has bloodlet, and Rashi says specifically it means when he has bloodlet from his shoulders, and he doesn't wash his hands afterwards, he's going to have this unnameable fear for 7 days. So these are a bunch of these things that we're listing in Shulchan Aruch when it lists all the things that a person is supposed to wash after. So it mentions most of these things. You have we all have a person washes when he wakes up in the morning, and the minhag is also to wash also when you get up from a nap. But you have a number of other things that are mentioned over here as well. Tlosin is 30. And we're going downward. First, the quest was 30 days. The next one, if he has bloodlet and doesn't wash his hands, then 7 days. Tlas would be three, yeah. Or tlasa, yeah. Tlas and tlasa both mean three, yeah. Tlas is like three of, and tlasa is just the number three, yeah. The shokel ma, that's the next one. The shokel mazye, if a person cuts his hair, and he doesn't wash his hands afterwards, that he's going to be in fear for 3 days. The shakal tufre, if he cuts his nails, he doesn't wash his hands, he's going to be afraid for 1 day. And in all of these cases, he's not going to know what he's afraid from, but it's not going to be that there's some particular thing that he can point to that he's afraid of. It's just going to be he's going to have this nameless kind of fear. So in other words, the point is a person should wash his hands after all these things, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Another thing, yoda a'ustia, when a person regularly puts his hand on, now ustia literally means his nostrils, but Rashi explains it means actually he puts his hand on his lips near his nostrils. So like this, a person does that regularly, dargala pachta, it's a step towards fear. So in other words, it brings him that he's gonna have a fear, he's gonna have a fear of ruach ra. So one idea of it is, in other words, it can be. You have the expression that Sefer HaChinuch says all the time about mitzvahs. Why does Hashem tell us to do certain actions of mitzvahs, even if we don't feel the idea behind it? Because Adam Nifal could be Poloisa, a person keeps on doing the same thing again and again, and after a while it penetrates and it starts affecting his thought processes. So here, it's kind of the other way around. When a person does like this regularly, which is the way that a person acts when he's afraid, then eventually attacker causes him to be afraid. On the other hand, the Oruch actually explains it the other way around. He reverses the cause and effect. The Oruch says, what all the Gemara is saying is, when a person is fearful, he'll generally put his hands like this. So therefore, in other words, I guess the idea is if you see someone like that, you should realize that he's afraid. Maybe the idea is then go try to calm him down, or go try to help him out. Anyway, yoda apusa, when a person puts his hand on his forehead, daugala shensa, then it's a step towards sleep. So again, it can be the cause is the putting his hand like this, and the effect is eventually he falls asleep. Or it could be the other way around. The person feels sleepy, and they often put their hand on their forehead like this. We learn in a braisa. So here's another thing as far as ruach ra. Oichlan u'mashkin tachas amita. If a person puts food or drink under the bed, afilu mechupin b'kli barzel, even if they're covered with an iron chest, so you'd think no ruach ra or anything could possibly get to them. Nevertheless, ruach ra shoda alah, still a ruach ra rests on it, and therefore you shouldn't keep food under the bed. And then in some places it says it applies more to a tavshil, cooked food. The Alter Rebbe, when he brings it in Hilchos Shmiras Guf B'Nefesh, he first mentions a tavshil, and then he mentions as well as other kinds of food. So B'Pashtus, therefore, it applies to any kind of food. Yeah, and drinks, right. With that said, I mean, they say, for example, let's say, you know, you're on an airplane. Let's say you put your bag of food under the seat in front of you, and the guy falls asleep over there. That's not considered tachas amita. We're talking about a normal bed, not a place where a person happens to fall asleep. The Rambam, actually, interestingly, the Rambam doesn't really go much in for all this business of ruach ra. So he actually, when he brings this halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh, but he brings it as a practical matter, because if you have it under the bed, something from under some dirt or whatever from the underside of the bed may fall into it. So you have that practical consideration as well. Okay, Tanan Abban, we learn in a braisa. Lo yishta adam mayim lo b'leila revias v'lo b'leila shabbosis. A person should not drink water. A person should not drink water from like a river or a pond or something on Tuesday night or on Friday night. And if he does, his blood is on his head, meaning, in other words, whatever happens to him is his own fault, because he's putting himself in danger. My sakana ruach ra, the sakana of an evil spirit. Further on, the Gemara talks about that Shadim used to roam around all the time, and sort of Chanina Mendoza told them that they're limited only to Tuesday nights and Friday nights. So therefore, those are the times when a person is especially susceptible to ruach ra, when he drinks water from such places. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions another point as well, that if a person drinks water at night and he drinks like with two hands, he's scooping up the water as fast as possible into his mouth, there's a different danger, the Gemara says, in Avodah Zarah, he may accidentally swallow a leech. But here we're talking about the Pashtus, he's not doing it quite, but the point is, in other words, if he's scooping it up with one hand, then the Pashtus, he's being a little more careful to check it first if there's anything in them. So then the only problem is, we're saying over here, is Ruach Ra, but if he's doing it like that, then there's an addition, that concern as well. So again, ruach ra, things we generally don't apply nowadays, matters involving practical medical things such as leeches, but pashtus, that's still an issue. I actually once read a story where somebody writes about a case that Itaka had with that, although whether it's a real life story or whether it's just a literary way of telling that thing in the Gemara, I don't know. But anyway. What? Yeah, we're talking about drinking from a pond or a river or a stream or whatever, that especially like the marshal of pond, you have leeches and all kinds of other bugs and who knows what to live there. Yeah. So to eat sochi mai takante. So what should a person do if he's thirsty and he needs to drink? So if he has a friend with him, ninare, then he should wake him up. Ninare can mean maybe shake him. The layman, tell him planyat sochina maya. Pliny, I'm thirsty for water. In other words, the idea is that then the mazikim that are there on Tuesday nights and Friday nights, and generally when there are two people around, they're going to run away, so therefore they won't harm him. The Eloi, and if not, if he doesn't have somebody with him, or we can't wake the guy up, Lema Beresha Shiva Koilas Da'ama David Alamoyim Bahadur Nishni. First, he should say the seven Koilas, the Kapitel Choftes, Mizmal David, Havel Hashem Bnei Elim, which has seven times the word Koil in it, which David said in connection with water. So only the first one of them is Koil Hashem Alamoyim. The rest of them don't refer to water. But nevertheless, we're calling them, Maushal says, we're calling them Alamoyim because the first one is about the water. And they represent the various levels of Kedusha corresponding to that. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, when the Chachamim were figuring out how many Brachas should there be in Shemana Esrei on Shabbos, they set it at seven because of this, because it says seven times Koil in that capital. So it represents the levels of Kedusha culminating with Shabbos. So Shanema, Koil Hashem al Amoyim, Keil HaKobed Irim Hashem al Mayim Rabim, so that's the first Koil, Koil Hashem Bakoyach, Koil Hashem Bahodur, Koil Hashem Shover Arozen, by Shabbat Hashem as Aaz Elvonim, Koil Hashem Chotz of Lavasesh, Koil Hashem Yachol Midbar, Yachol Hashem Midbar Kodesh, Koil Hashem Yachol Ayoris, Ayolis, Vayechsef Yoris, Vayecholik, Kolo Oim HaKobed, and then that'll scare away the Mazik. The Gemara, by the way, has a slightly different girsa over here. The Gemara has first that he should say the Shiva Koilus. The one about waking up the other guy and telling him is only a little bit later in the next piece over here is a little further on. If he can't say those kapitlach, if he can't say those psukim. Anyway, the Eloi, if not, he can't say the psukim for whatever reason. Neimahachi, leimahachi. You should say like this. You should say the following lachash. Lul shofan and nigran and nudafin. It's words of a lachash. They don't always have to make sense. Lul means like it can mean a chicken coop. It can also mean like a small hole. Like you have, for example, the lul in the side of the mizbeach. A shofan is a little creature, a rabbit or a hyrax or some little creature like that. And nigran, the Gemara mentions in a few places as a medicinal drink that was made with beet juice and oil and other ingredients. And anudafin, I don't know any place else where we have the word. Anyway, he continues. So he says that ben koich v'yasivna. He says I sit among the stars. Ben bliyeh shmeine azilna. I walk between the skinny and the fat ones. In other words, in effect, he's saying to the shadim, you have plenty of other potential victims to choose from. Leave me alone. The Eloi, and if not, if he doesn't know that lachash, e ike inish bade, if he has somebody else with him, nitare, then he should wake him up, velemele, and tell him, plani ba planta tzachina maya, ploini ben ploinis, I'm thirsty for water, vahadu nishte, and then he should drink, again with the idea being that that'll scare off the shadim, because there are two of them. The Eloi, and if not, mekarkish nachtmo achatzva, he should bang the lid against the barrel, vahadu nishte, and then he should drink. So here, I guess, actually, then we're not talking about over here only from rivers and ponds and whatnot, because here we're talking about drinking from a barrel, and we're still saying that there's the danger of ruach ra. So then in that case, that would be different than that Gemara in Avodah Zarah that's talking about leeches. The next thing, actually, the Gemara is going to mention over here is drinking from rivers and ponds and whatnot. So here, we're talking about even drinking from a barrel, there's still the problem of ruach ra, so therefore he takes one of these steps. The Eloi, and if not, Nishti Bramidi, Bahad Nishti, should throw something into the water, which I guess the idea is the splash of it will scare away the shadim, Bahad Nishti, and then he can drink. Tanar Abanan, we learn on another Braisa. Lo Yishta Adamayim Loiman Anahoris Foleiman Hagamim Balaila. A person shouldn't drink water from rivers or from ponds at night. Vim Shasa Damim Berosha. If he does, then his life is in danger. Then his blood is on his head. Mipnasakona, because of the danger. My Sakona, Sakona Shabriri. Here the danger is Shabriri, which is another type of blindness that the Gemara mentions in a few places. The Gemara is assuming that it's a blindness that's caused by a particular shed. So if he is thirsty, what should he do? If there's somebody else with him, you should say, ploini ben ploinis, I'm thirsty for water, v'hodu nishti, and then drink. And if not, then he should say to himself, Planya ba planisa, ploini ben ploinis. He mentions his own name and his mother's name, Omra loch imach, li imi, my mother told me, is daher mishabriri. Be careful from shabriri. Be careful not to expose yourself to danger from shabriri. Then he continues with a lachash where he reduces one letter of it every time. Briri, riri, yiri, ri. It's like the idea is he's reducing the power of the shed. And he finishes off, Tzachina Maya Bakasi Chivri, I'm thirsty for water I'm thirsty for water in white cups, which Rashbam explains means new earthenware cups. So that lachash will help remove any problem of ruach ra. Apparently, it won't necessarily deal with the problem of a leech, which is mentioned in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. So there he should be careful to drink slowly and check that there's nothing in the water. Okay. Piska, so now a quotation from the Mishnah. We said, so we got into this whole discussion by way of discussing the Arba Kosis, where the Gemara had started with the question, given that Arba Kosis is an even number and it's Zugis, and how did the Chachamim set that up? So that led us into this whole discussion about Shadim and Kishuf and so on and so forth. So now the Mishnah had continued. They should not give a person who has to collect tzedakah should not be given less than 4 cups of wine. Even if he has to collect tzedakah from the tamchui, they had two systems for collecting tzedakah. And in those days, they had the Rambam described in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim. Every Jewish community has a tzedakah fund where they give money to the poor people and they go buy their own food. But then you also have some, in some kehillas, they also have a tamchoi, which is where they collect ready-to-eat food from the balabatim and they give it out on a daily basis to the poor people, kind of like a soup kitchen, basically. So now we're saying, even if a person has to be supported from the tamchoi, where the Mishnah in Peah tells us that such a person doesn't even have it, he has to, in order to collect from the tamchoi, he has to have not even enough money for 2 meals worth of food, then still the gaboi tzedak have to make sure to give him enough wine for dalad kosis. So the Gemara asks Pshita, isn't that obvious? A person has a mitzvah of dalad kosis, so of course they have to provide it for him. The answer is Leitzricha Ela Afilu L'Rav Akiva. The Chiddush is even according to Rav Akiva. The Omar, where he says, as we're going to quote soon, Asei Shabbat Chochoyov Al Tzadach Labrius, better make your Shabbos like a weekday rather than needing to come to Tzedakah and then to require to take from people. Here, even Rabbi Akiva will agree that a person is obligated, if necessary, to collect from tzedakah, to go to the gaboi tzedakah and tell them, I don't have enough money for wine for the dalad kosis, and they're obligated to provide it for him. So that's what we're going to discuss soon, actually. We're going to mention a number of things that Rabbi Akiva said. It is actually a bit complicated. First of all, the Gemara is going to point out now, actually, you have like this. There is a Gemara in Beitza that says, Levu alive ani perei. Hashem says, borrow money on my account for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and I'll pay back. On the other hand, we have the Sasei Shabbat Chochol al Tzadach Labrius. So there's a few different considerations and a few different possibilities. One consideration is, does a person have anything to give as a mashkin? If a person has assets that he can give as a mashkin, so therefore he's able to take out a loan, then he should do that. Levu alive ani perei. On the other hand, if he has no assets at all, then he shouldn't be borrowing money. A person has to know when he's borrowing money that he should have the ability to pay back, and all that. So then, that's when we say, so now, on the other hand, so for example, so the Alter Rebbe goes on to discuss at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, so you have like this. So suppose you have a person who has enough money for 14 meals. Now, the halacha is he's not allowed to collect from the tamchoi. Actually, I had it wrong. Sorry. A person who can collect from the tamchoi is a person who doesn't have enough for 14 meals, which is an entire week's worth of meals. Now, really, though, you have 15 meals because you have to have 3 meals on Shabbos. Now, suppose a person has enough for 14 meals. So he has enough to be able to eat 2 meals a day. Therefore, he's not entitled to collect from the tamchoi. So that week, he may have to be asei Shabbat Chochol. If he has nothing else, and as the Gemara is going to say in a second, he should try to scrimp during the week so he has something extra for Shabbos. But if he can't, he shouldn't go and ask the Gaboi Tzedakah. On the other hand, the following week, when he doesn't have 14 meals worth anymore, and therefore the Gaboi Tzedakah are obligated to give him from the Tamchoi, then at that point, they're obligated to give him 15 meals worth, so he should have a Shalosh Shabbos.
Chol means less food?
So Chol means, in other words, to eat exactly as he would on a weekday, or yeah, to eat fewer meals, yeah, to eat 2 meals rather than 3. The Torah actually mentions now it's interesting, you know, the Rosh, right, when he and his family, the Rosh had 8 sons who were all great Taman Chachamim, the most famous of them being Rabbi Yaakov, the Bala Turim. When they lived in Germany, they were actually quite well off, but then the Rosh and his whole family had to escape Germany so it doesn't happen to them what happened to Madame Rutenberg, being arrested and held for ransom. So they had to leave everything behind. They came to Spain. Eventually the Rosh was appointed as Rav of Toledo, which at least gave him a salary, but still he and his family were having a very hard time of it financially. So the tour mentions at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, he says, I discussed this point many times with my father, the Rosh. What does a person do, Taka, like in my situation, where I don't have money for Shabbos? Should it be Levu Alai Vani Perea, or should it be Asei Shabbat Chachov Al Tzayach Labrius? It gives you a little window into how the tour lived. Anyway, it's a ton of Eliyahu. We learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Eliyahu. Even though Rabbi Akiva is saying that, a person should at least make a small thing in his house. meaning even he can't afford really good food for Shabbos, but at least he should make some kind of, at least even if he's only, like we're saying, having two meals on Shabbos instead of three, at least he should make something extra, a little bit extra nice for one of those meals. Well, my ninhu, I'm going to Papa cast kosa de harsana. What would that be? So the Papa says, for example, he could make kosa de harsana, which is a dish that they had then where you take fish and fry them with a little bit of, with some flour and their own fat. So I guess it was kind of like their equivalent of gefilte fish. So it's not much. You take small fishes, like sardines or something, and you have a little bit of fat that comes out of them and a little bit of flour, and you make kind of gefilte fish out of it, but at least that you should have something, that little extra covered Shabbos. So in other words, the idea is you should try to, at least to the extent that he can, scrimp and save a little bit during the week, so at least he has that recovered Shabbos. Kiddetinan, as in fact we learn in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Yehuda ben Teimaimer, have a az kanoma v'kal kanesha v'rotz katzvi v'gibber kari lasa tzayna v'chal shabashmayim. So therefore, in other words, a person should have. So what does it mean, as kanomer? So Rashi explains, in other words, it means that a person needs to strengthen himself to do mitzvahs more than he would normally be capable of. So even though a person might say, well, I'm only capable of having 14 meals this week, so of necessity, I'm only going to have two meals on Shabbos, and my meals are going to be the same bread and water or whatever as I have the rest of the week. Nevertheless, he should be as kanomer and try to strengthen himself to whatever extent possible and at least have that extra kosa de harsana or something like that covered Shabbos. So kosa literally means cup, and harisana is the pashtus related to the word cheres, which means earthenware. So it was called that, I guess, because maybe they served it in cups. I don't know, but that's what it was. It was a dish where there was a dish of fish fried with fat and a little bit and with fat and flour, with a little bit of their own fat and flour. Rashi doesn't say anything, but it's mentioned. This thing is mentioned in other places in Shas.
I see you saying the flour.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Gemara describes it in various places. The Gemara describes it, and Rashi describes it in various places. So we know what it was. We know what it was, but I'm saying, you know, if we had to draw an analogy with something that we eat nowadays, like covered Shabbos, the closest example I can think of would be gefilte fish. Okay. Marsha, by the way, points out over here, so what is the inyan of these four things, as kanoma, kal kanesha, etc.? So each one does have, so the Torah, in fact, explains, and then the Alter Rebbe brings at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, at the beginning of Madura Basra, what each of them signifies in Avodah. But Marsha says also, what it represents is, when you think about it, there's four things that hinder a person from reaching shleimus. First of all, a person might be poor, and that's, as the Gemara says, anius ma'avira sa'adim adas kone, that causes a person to violate Hashem's will. Second of all, is you have rishoyim, who are causing trouble for Jews, and maybe they should help, that they're all cut off and gone. The third one is a person's mazel. For example, you have a person has more of a tendency towards certain kinds of behaviors, so that if he doesn't conquer those tendencies, he's going to have a hard time of it. And the fourth thing is a person's own Yetzirah. So therefore, corresponding to those, you have these four things. As kanomer means you have a person who overcomes the, for example, he's poor and b'derech hateva, he doesn't have anything to be able to do something extra for mitzvahs, but nevertheless, he powers through and does it, like Rashi had said. That's as kanomer. Kal kanesher will be, even though he has a bad mazel in Shemayim, nevertheless, he overcomes it and flies above it, like the way an eagle flies high. The rotz katzvi will be to run away from Yahavu Shoyim or making Zeres and preventing Jews from doing mitzvah. So he runs and hightails it out of there to a place where it's safer to keep them. Yahav, for example, you know, the Rambam describes in Geras Hashmad, for example, and also he describes it, I think, in Hilchos Yisro D'Atorah. True that if a person is living in a place where they're preventing Jews from doing mitzvahs, there are certain aterim, certain mitzvahs that he might be able to be over on temporarily to save himself, but nevertheless, he should be getting out of there as fast as possible. We know, you know, the Rambam himself was Mekayim that his family got out of Spain after they were forcing Jews to become Muslims over there. He and his family got out of there as fast as possible. Anyway, and then the fourth one, Gibur Kari, is for a person to overcome his own Yetzirah, Ezio Gibur Akavishas Yetzirah. So anyway, the point is, in context of the Gemara over here, the point is a person has to be as kanomer, even though he might say, B'derech HaTeva, what can I do? I have no money, but nevertheless, he should power through and see what he can do to at least have something extra L'Kavod Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Shiva Dvarim Tziva Rabbi Akiva as Rabbi Yeshua Beno. Rabbi Akiva taught, Rabbi Akiva gave seven instructions to his son Rabbi Yeshua. Now Tosfos over here and a couple of other places in Shas discusses this Rabbi Yeshua might be identical with Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Now we find in the Gemara in Brachas where Rabbi Akiva, where Ben Azai describes Rabbi Akiva as bold. We actually have, we had a Gemara in Shabbos as well, where a Min tries to make fun of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha and also makes fun of him for his boldness. So it was hereditary. But the vort would be, in other words, so what? Right, so the Korcha means bold, exactly. So he would, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha then maybe might be the son of Rabbi Akiva. I've seen there's an explanation. So why do they call him Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha? Why not call him Rabbi Yeshua ben Rabbi Akiva? Is because we know that Rabbi Akiva was originally an Amah Oretz. We know, in fact, by the time he went to learn Torah, he had already been married once and he already had a son. When Rochel married him, he was a widow or divorcee, and he had a son. In Ovestid of Nassim, it tells about how he went to Cheder to start learning his Aleph Beis. He went with his son. So that son may well have been this Yeshua. So now they didn't call him Yeshua ben Rabbi Akiva because his father was not Rabbi Akiva yet. By the time Rabbi Akiva became Rabbi Akiva, then already people were used to calling him ben Korcha, the son of the bold. So, and then the name stuck. So Tosfos discusses that over here. They discuss in several places, maybe, maybe not. There's other Gemaras that seem to not fit with that so well. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva told his son Rabbi Yeshua, Bni says, first of all, Al Teshev B'Goyv Hashal Ir V'Tishne. Don't sit in the heights of the city and teach Torah, because people are going to be passing by all the time, and they're going to distract you from your learning. But second one, Val Torah B'Ir Shorasher Tamid Chachamim. Don't live in a city where the leaders of the city are Tamid Chachamim. Now, the Rashbam says the reason is because the Talmid Chacham are busy learning Torah, so they may not take care of city affairs the way they're supposed to. You need a person who knows on the ball and is able to take care of things as they come up, and a Talmid Chacham may be too fartift in his learning. But Ben Yehoyada points out a couple of other practical reasons that might be against it. First of all, the Talmid Chacham, if in such a city, so it's good on the one hand, they realize the value of Talmid Chachamim and they want to appoint them to positions of responsibility. On the other hand, that means they might appoint you as well, and then you're going to be distracted from your learning because you're busy dealing with municipal affairs and all. Another point is also Talmid Chachamim they have to tell people off in Mila Dishmaya. They have to tell people off when they're not behaving properly. And the result is not everybody likes them. We had in Masechta Shabbos, for example, where it said, where Rabbah pointed out that if a Talmid Chacham is well-liked by the people in town, it means he's not doing a good job of telling them Musa in Mila Dishmaya. So what's going to happen? Ben Yehoyada says. So what's going to happen if you have a city then where the leaders are Talmid Chachamim, and inevitably you're going to have people talking about them badly? It's going to rub off on you as well, and they're going to start talking about you badly because you're also a Talmid Chacham and you're associated with them, and various other reasons he says as well. Anyway, Va'altikonis v'beis chapisaim. You shouldn't go suddenly into your house. How much more so you shouldn't go into somebody else's house all of a sudden. You should knock first. And the Gemara, in fact, tells a story in Ksubas where one of the Chachamim came home after many years away learning in the yeshiva, and he walked in all of a sudden, and then his wife was so shocked that she died, and he had to beg the Eibishter to do Tchias Amesim. So a person should even to his own house, should knock and let people know he's coming. Okay.
3 days.
So 3 days they never waited before he saw the Friedrich Rebbe. I mean, my understanding of that was always that he was preparing himself for it, but yeah, I guess it could have also been so as not to shock that as not to shock the Friedrich Rebbe, couldn't he? Okay. Next, Val Timna min Olim Miraglecha. Don't hold back from wearing shoes on your feet. A person should always be wearing shoes. In fact, we learned in Shabbos that the expression over there that a person should even sell the beams of his house and buy shoes if that's what it takes. There is actually a Gemara in Shabbos where you have that story with the Min who was making fun of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. If it is the same Rabbi Yeshua, then you have a story that in the story over there, the Min sees that Rabbi Yeshua is not wearing shoes and he starts making fun of him for that. So either it's not the same Rabbi Yeshua, or if it was, I'm a Foshim say over there, one possibility, it was on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. He couldn't be wearing shoes.
Earlier, Rashi says, should
So not well to somehow inform them that it's just inform them. Yeah, say that it's you or whatever. Yeah, say let. Yes, okay, so you say something, you do something to show that it's you, yes. Yeah, okay. Some it depends. Some people, if they sing a song, sure, other people they might tell them go away. okay. Anyway. Next. Hashkin v'echo b'kayitz mipnei hachama v'chodef mipnei hatzina. Always get up early in the morning and eat. In the summer, that'll protect you from the bad effects of the sun. And in the winter, it'll protect you from the bad effects of the cold. Rashi brings from a Gemara Rashbam brings from a Gemara in Bava Kama that quotes a pasuk in this connection. Lo yud ovu v'lo yud smo v'lo yakam shodef v'shemesh. Where we have, if a person is not hungry and thirsty, then the sun and the heat won't affect it. The next thing Rabbi Akiva tells his son, which we quoted before, and the last one, always make the effort to be around to do business with somebody who the hour smiles on him, meaning a person who you see is having good mazel. So kind of be around him, so to speak, his mazel will rub off on you. Now, the Papa says it doesn't mean necessarily to buy things from him or to sell things from him. In fact, that may cause his mazel to be snatched away. Rather, it means to make a partnership with him. Try to make a partnership with such a person, and that way, as the business grows and he makes profits because of his good mazel, then you'll also be making profits as well. However, my dichtiv, but now that we have when it says by ear, Masi Yoda Beirachta, where the Sutton says to Hashem, why are you so surprised that Iyav is such a tzaddik? You blessed the works of his hands. And the Gemara explains in Baba Basra, that means kol anoto pruta me'Iyav yis misbarech. Even anybody who took up who got a pruta from Iyav would get a bracha. This was the basis that the Rebbe quoted when he first started giving out dollars was based on this. So I feel the mizban mine was a bunile shapu dummy. Then it's fine, even you're saying to be around a person with mazel and to buy and sell from him by the same logic as a person is getting a pruta from Iyav and gets a bracha the same way a person you buy and sell from a person with mazel and you also benefit from his mazel as well. So these are the seven things that Rabbi Akiva told Rabbi Yeshua. Next, Hamisha Dvarim Sivar Rabbi Akiva as Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Kshei Chobosh Beveis HaAsurim. When Rabbi Akiva was in jail, as we know, famously he had taught Torah and they put him in jail for it. So for a while there, at least they allowed him to have his talmidim around, and so he taught Rabbi Shimon. He taught Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai five things while he was in jail. Now the background is Omalei. Rabbi Shimon told him. Rabbi Shimon says to Rabbi Akiva, Rebbe Lamdeni Torah. Teach me Torah. I'm here, you're here in jail. I'm here able to visit you. So teach me. Omalei eini melamedcha. So Rabbi Akiva says, I don't want to teach you. Why? Because he's going to put him in danger. At this point, the Romans are going in and killing anybody who's teaching Torah. So in other words, he's saying, in effect, Rabbi Akiva is thinking, look, I'm already in danger. I don't want to put you in danger as well. There is actually a very interesting explanation on it from Dodas Rishonim, who also explains the next line of the Gemara over here, which we're going to see in a second. Sounds very strange. He explains that when we have the famous story where Rabbi Akiva is teaching Torah publicly, and Papus Ben Yehuda tells him, how could you? And Rabbi Akiva tells him the whole matter with the fish and the fox. The vote was, he says, at that point, the Romans weren't yet killing anybody who's keeping mitzvahs or teaching Torah publicly. They're only throwing them in jail. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva figure, that's a risk he can take. So they'll put me in jail. Fine. That's not such a sakonis nefashis. Now, though, the gzeiras had intensified. Now anybody who's learning or teaching Torah is going to be executed. So now Rabbi Akiva doesn't want to put Rabbi Shimon into that danger.
Himself,
or himself, for that matter. Yeah. What? So that's according to that. Then the Mesiris Nefesh was that in the end, he had Mesiris Nefesh, as the Gemara says, that Yotz and Shemasi Be'echad, when they tortured him and killed him. But to begin with, in other words, the Cheshbon was that it's not such a big sakana, because they're only arresting people at this point. And that's how he ends. Anyway, Omale, so Rabbi Shimon says a very shocking thing. If you don't teach me, I'm going to tell my father Yechoi, and he's going to hand you over to the government. Meaning, in other words, apparently that Yechoi had connections with the government. Now, how could Reb Shimon say such a thing? So here, Marsha says he's exaggerating. He's not obviously going to do that, but he's saying, you know, if you're not going to teach me Torah, then look, I'm going to master you for something that's even worse. You're going to be in even bigger trouble with the Romans than you already are. Now, here also, Dodos HaRishonim explains the vote is. How is it b'chlal that Rabbi Akiva is having Talmidim visit him in jail? And we have the Gemara in Eruvin that we had not so long ago where he had one of his Talmidim, Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi, is bringing him food and water every day and not stam some person. Evidently, what happened was, even though the Romans are busy killing anybody they can find and arresting anybody they can find, there were still some people, one of them being Yechoi, who managed to keep up connections with them. And therefore, Mestam also with plenty of Shreichad, they're keeping the Romans at bay from Rabbi Akiva. So now Reb Shimon is telling him, if you don't teach me Torah, what am I going to tell my father? You're not teaching Torah anyway. He's going to figure in that case, why am I bothering putting in all this effort and constantly endangering myself to help Rabbi Akiva have an easier time of it in jail? If anyway, he's not even, if anyway, he won't even teach Torah over there. So.
Wait, one second. There's a cross cache here. You won't teach him and won't tell the authorities that.
Ah, so that's what they, one second. That's what I'm saying. So Marsha explains that he's not doesn't literally mean he's going to do it. He's like making an empty threat, kind of. He's using it to express. He's using an empty threat. In other words, I could get you in bigger trouble with the government. But again, Doris sort of showing him is saying not so much that it's not such an empty threat. What he's saying. Well, according to Marsha, it's not almost like a joke, but it's an empty threat, but it's to show how badly he wants to learn Torah from Rabbi Akiva. According to Doris HaRishonim, it's not such an empty threat. What he means is, like this, my father, Yechoi, is putting in tremendous efforts and giving shoychad all over the place and putting his life constantly in danger in order that you, Rabbi Akiva, should be able to, that at least the Romans don't just go and then start taking you right away and executing you. But if I tell him that you're not going to be teaching me Torah, then he's going to figure, what am I bothering for? So therefore, in effect, Moser Cholamalchus, in other words, he's going to say, then in that case, I may as well not bother trying to keep up my connections with the Romans and try to save Rabbi Akiva in whatever way he can. And the result is you're going to be left to the mercies of the Romans. And then, yeah. How did he talk like that to your Rebbe? He wanted so badly to learn Torah. That thing, yeah. Amalei, so Rabbi Akiva tells him, beneath. What? I don't know. You could say it's a joke. At a time like that, you don't joke. But, Omalei, so Rabbi Akiva tells him, don't think I'm not teaching you Torah because I don't want myself to be in danger. Bni yosim masha ego roitzel linak or roitzel honey. Even more than the calf wants to nurse from its mother, the mother wants to give the milk. So in other words, as much as you want to learn Torah, I want to teach you Torah more, but I don't want to put you in danger. Omalei, so Rabbi Shimon says, fine, mi besakana, who's after all the one in danger? Vala ego besakana. It's the calf that's in danger. In other words, you're not in any more danger by teaching me Torah. You're already in jail anyway. I'm the one who's exposed to more danger. Fine, I'm willing to take the risk. So Rabbi Akiva is going to teach him, but I think we'll save for tomorrow what he actually, I think we'll save for tomorrow what he actually taught him. Tune in tomorrow. Yeah. Well, it's going to take too long to go through them and we don't have time. Yeah, it's fine. Tomorrow.
I'm
chilling. Okay. Fine. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. Right. Well, now we'll learn Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. That's also teaching Torah. As a matter of fact, when you get down to it, the things that Rabbi Akiva is going to tell Reb Shimon are not, he's not teaching him like, you know, Divrei Halacha or whatever. He's teaching him things of Derech Eretz, things of proper behavior. Al Derech, like the ones that we said that Rabbi Akiva taught Rabbi Yeshua. So, the Torah, yeah, Torah, yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. Okay. So, had Yom Yom Mashiach Go'olach of Dalim Tishrei. In the time of the Bais Mikdash, when a person became a ger, there were three steps: Mila, Tevila, and a Korban. Nowadays, as the Rambam writes, we don't have a Korban, so a person needs Mila and Tevila. When the Bais Mikdash is built, he'll bring a Korban. Nevertheless, the fact is, he's considered a ger gomer l'chol davar. He's considered a yid for all purposes. And the chiddush, in fact, is that I ever talked about this in a chiddush with the Israeli chief rabbis, that not only is he a ger gomer, even when the Bais Mikdash is built, he'll remain a ger gomer. He'll even be able to eat kodshim, and his daughter would be able to marry a kohen, etc., even before he brings the korban, because we don't say that the gear that he did nowadays is an incomplete one and has to wait for his korban. The gear that he did nowadays is a complete 100% gear. The fact that he has to bring a korban is a separate chiyuv, which he has to bring, but it doesn't impinge on his status as a ger at all. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos. Let's see. Continuing, we said yesterday that a person has to bathe on Erev Shabbos, so a person should also shampoo his hair and cut his nails and take a haircut if necessary. Now, you shouldn't take, you shouldn't wash his hands during. Well, we said yesterday, wash his face, hands, and feet. Right. That's true. After today, right. Now, you shouldn't cut your fingernails and toenails on the same day. And also, you shouldn't cut your fingernails or your hair on Rosh Chodesh, even if it's Erev Shabbos. Now the Alter Rebbe actually mentions the point about not cutting hair. He doesn't mention the point about not cutting nails on Rosh Chodesh, which maybe implies that the Alter Rebbe holds there's not a problem there. Then, as far as cutting nails, some people are makbid not to do them in order, but rather to do every other one. So you have on the right hand, you start with the index finger, then the fourth finger, beis dalet aleph gimel hey, and on the other one, dalet beis hey gimel aleph. I guess it's probably some Kabbalistic idea. I don't know. Some people also are makbid not to cut their nails on Thursday, because when do your nails start growing? After you cut them, they start growing on the third day. So then it comes out, they start growing on Shabbos. So like then it's, so to speak, the cutting of them wasn't recovered Shabbos. So you don't do it on Friday. That's a day. Friday, if I care, if you do it, but not if it's Rosh Chodesh. As far as fingernails, again, the Alter Rebbe doesn't mention Rosh Chodesh, so you were saying Thursday, not Friday. And one more thing, right? Friday's the best day, yeah. And one more thing, after a person
Friday, it's growing on Shabbos. I saw.
Yeah, but no, it only starts growing on the third day, is what we're saying over here. And one more thing, after a person cuts his nails, you should burn them. We know the famous thing. The Gemara says Surf and Chosid, and you have the famous thing that even though you have the famous thing that even though it's a Tosfos mentions it's harmful to a person to burn things that came from his body, but nevertheless, as a Chosid, he does it. So there's not even the remotest chance that somebody else will get harmed by it. Hanan ben Akash, Amatzah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Zakeh Yisrael.